Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the day at the beach of free speech. Everybody likes to go to the beach. So get out your canvas bathing suit. Do they still make those? And shake the sand out of your towel and head on down to the beach. And while you're at it, send Badly Inhibited Fundage to RBN. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on the donate button. All right, today we have with us Filbert. Filbert, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. I got my banana hammock on and I'm ready to go swimming.
Okay, I don't know what a banana hammock is, but...
Men's Speedo. And Speedo is actually a brand, so...
I see, okay. I thought maybe you were talking about a literal hammock, but all right. All right, well, that creates all sorts of images. Hey, when was the last time you were at the beach?
Last summer, I live at one of my local area lakes, and luckily enough, there is some government-owned property that hasn't been developed yet, and local people, and anybody for that matter, including all the immigrants we're intaking, are able to go here legally and enjoy the undeveloped land. So that's the last time I've been at the water.
All right, well, that sounds good. Okay, so speaking of water, do you know that we've got like 10,000 people or something per day crossing the border?
That's what I hear. I can't help but wonder if it's even more than that, because
there's more.
Usually if the intelligence agencies via the media are telling us it's 85,000, I give or take 500,000, right? And that may or may not be correct, but nonetheless, I think it's safe to say that it's more than, the problem is worse than what they're leading on to. Who knows what the real number is, but I think that's a general good rule of thumb to assume that things are worse than they tell you.
It's a gazillion people, and how many of them are ever going to get sent back?
No, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, none. So you'll hear an awful lot on the radio about, where are we going to send them? Where are we going to send them? And all the options we have are, we should send them to all the sanctuary cities, right? And we're just supposed to believe that that's where they're going to stay, right? Like, oh, they won't come to your neighborhood just as long as they're in San Francisco, right? When in reality, what's happening is these non-white immigrants, or I think that's almost doing them a favor by even calling them immigrants, that's doing a disservice to the people, like, say, from Britain, that I actually work with a guy from Britain that said he personally paid $12,000 for citizenship, and it's going up and up, you know, from every year. So like next year it'll be more, but anywho, I think it's doing a disservice to people like that, that actually do, white people rather, that actually pay for citizenship. But yeah, these non-white immigrants are being sent to places like Maine, you know, northern Minnesota, probably the upper peninsula of Michigan, all the extremely white areas. You look no further than Wikipedia to see all the heavily white populated areas. These people, that's where these people are being sent. And I don't mean to suggest that Wikipedia is the be all end all of truth either. So don't get me mistaken, but my point is that you're being deluded, right? The white population is surely being deluded. And these people are not just fleeing, as they say, warfare and poverty. They're solely here to replace the ethnic white population here. And I think a lot of people see this. They're just afraid to say it.
Yeah, they are here to replace us. They're not here to vote Democrat. They're not here to vote Democrat. I mean, here's the thing. They can steal an election if they want. They don't need to import like a whole bunch of people from random countries. And it's not about the Democratic Party. It's about Jewish power. The Jews want to replace white people as a majority. They don't want whites to be a majority. Whites can be a small minority, but they mustn't be a majority. And
I hate it. I would add that we need to be a hated minority. It's important to distinguish that, I think, because if you look at the minority treatment that, say, blacks have had here for the past 200 years or more than that, we are not going to have the same kind of minority treatment that they've had, right? So once we are a minority as whites, we are not going to get, you know, this affirmative action BS that they have received, and we're not going to get preferential treatment and special rights or even human rights for that matter. I think that's important to mention. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm sorry. Continue.
Yeah, nobody cares about the Democratic Party. This isn't about the Democratic Party. It's not about the Republican Party. It's about replacing, it's a Jewish, you know, and I know everybody says I'm always ragging on the Jews. And actually, I get along with Jews fine on an individual basis. There is a dynamic, a group dynamic to Jewish behavior. I mean, there's some very important aspects of Jewish behavior that make it problematic that can only happen if there's a group. In-group preference. If there's no group, there's no in-group preference. It's the way they relate to each other. And it's also, you know, there's like this paranoia. And I'm not going to name names. I ran into some Jewish guy I'd seen on the internet. And on the internet, I've seen his YouTube videos, and he talks pretty sensibly about a bunch of stuff. And like my initial, he was walking out of the building, I was walking in, I said, "Hey, I know you." It was just my instinct. And then next thing I know, it's like, oh, wait a minute. Actually, I don't want this person to know me. He's going to cause trouble for me. So I had to run away really fast. And the thing is, like, he's not pushing for crazy stuff. He's not pushing for immigration and everything. But I don't know him well enough. And my thing is, well, if he realized that I'm David Duke's right-hand man, he'll probably try to undermine me. And so I decided I had to run away real fast rather than getting to know him. And, you know, that's the thing. You could have somebody like, okay, there's a guy named Max Blumenthal, and his father is a big, you know, Jewish Democrat who works for, who's close to the Clintons, but Max Blumenthal has actually done a lot of good work about, you know, exposing Israeli racism, Israeli Jewish racism towards Palestinians, for instance, right? And so he doesn't work for the Jewish agenda, but when the chips are down, like Nick Fuentes, who talks about Jewish power, doesn't just talk about Zionism or Israeli stuff, but he actually talks bluntly about Jewish power the way I do. Max Blumenthal is out there trying to undermine Nick Fuentes, right? He's like cooperating with some investigative reporters to smear him or get him deplatformed or things like that. And so the thing is, you can have Jews who aren't even supporting the Jewish agenda, but when the chips are down and they're worried about a wave of anti-Semitism, they're gonna take sides, and they're gonna side with Jews most times. I mean, somebody like not. I mean, this wouldn't apply to Brother Nathaniel. I mean, Brother Nathaniel he's picked his side. He's made his bed and knows where to sleep. But a lot of these other people. That's what I think. What do you think?
Yeah, there's very, very few of them, unfortunately, like Brother Nathaniel. And, I am a fan of Brother Nathaniel. The problem almost seems to be like, I don't know if, say the term critical mass is appropriate, but there almost does seem to be, say, a critical mass where, if there's a certain amount of them, then they explode, right? And like we have to contain them or else, right? Or else we face the types of situations that we are currently facing. And, that may or may not be, I guess it's arguable that that's a good analogy or not, but I sort of think it's relative. You could take an example, such as blacks. When you look at cities that are largely, you know, 90% white, or more, when they start to fall below, they tend to take these positions of power, and we can't do anything about it.
Okay, yeah. We missed a few of the words you said, but there is a critical mass. The thing is, what you tend to find, whether you're talking about a board of directors or whatever, is once a Jew gets in, they start holding the door open for other Jews. They tend to operate kind of like a valve. They come in. It's easy for Jews to come in. It's hard to get rid of them. And once Jews take over in an institution that they didn't start, something like Disney, why is Disney so thoroughly Jewish now? How did that even happen?
That's a good point. So Disney was, as far as I know, and you probably know more about this than myself, but Disney was the last major media conglomerate, or not even a conglomerate, but major media company that the Jews had to wait literally until Walt Disney himself died to start, you know, influencing it and to subversing it.
Yeah, so they got in, and now it's thoroughly Jewish. And you know, other weird things happen. So, for instance, the Washington Post. The Washington Post was owned by some colonel back in the 20s and 30s, and he got targeted. I don't know why he was targeted, whether he was, I don't know, was he supporting an unacceptable person? I don't know what it was, why he was targeted, but he was targeted for an advertiser boycott. And back in the days, department stores were major advertisers in print newspapers. And department stores, in an awful lot of places, department stores were run by Jews. And you look at, you know, some of the big names in, like, family names associated with department stores. How about Garfinkel's, right? Isn't Garfinkel's a big department store? And that's a very Jewish name. So there was a big Jewish boycott, advertiser boycott of the Washington Post, which put it into financial trouble. And then Eugene Myers, who was a Jew, for a while was the head of the Fed, the Federal Reserve. Eugene Myers was able to swoop in and buy it up for cheap. And he published the Washington Post and passed it on to his daughter, Catherine Graham, who was the head of it, during, the Watergate. Now, she was only half Jewish because Eugene Myers' wife was not Jewish, so Catherine Graham was half Jewish, and then she passed it on. She passed it on to her son. But I mean, they were publishers. The editors in chief were Jewish. Ben Bradley, of Watergate fame. He was Jewish. Well, then it got acquired a few years back by Jeff Bezos of Amazon, who's not Jewish, but what does he do? He hires a literal Israeli to run it. I forgot the guy's name, but you can look it up on Wikipedia. And so, you know, it's weird. Sometimes you get, even if you get a goyish reacquisition of one of these properties, they'll still let it be run by Jews. Well, here's another example. You had the acquisition of Reuters Newswire. Now, Reuters was actually Jewish from the beginning. Reuters was a Jewish news wire. It got taken over by Thomson, which is, they run news wires and publishing. It's a big media conglomerate based in, I think, in Canada. And Thomson is not a Jew. Well, he takes over Reuters. What does he do? Does he send Goy to run Reuters? No. He takes Reuters Jews and lets them run Thomson. How does that happen? But it did happen. And I don't know.
I'll tell you how this happens. This happens by being in control of the flow of money. And these Jews know that if you're in control of the money system, you can control the flow of information. And, I mean, this goes back to, like, something I've wrestled with in my own head is which is more important, the control of money or the control of information. And it's arguable that I think the control of information is more important. Mm-hmm. But I think to establish that first, you need to control the flow of money. So as you have correctly pointed out, these Jews largely, in part or wholly, I guess you could say, have been able to get away with what they have been for the last 100+ years because they've been able to print money from zero resources, right? Money for nothing. And I think you're correct.
Well, I don't know if I've ever put it exactly like that. But yeah, I mean, we do have a fiat money system. I don't talk a huge amount about that. We have a fiat money system, and Jews they had a big role in the creation of the Federal Reserve, and certainly during the late 20th century and the 21st century were very ensconced in the Federal Reserve. Now, under Donald Trump, for what it's worth, he appointed Goy. Jerome Powell, the current head of the Fed, is a Goy. And, he got rid of Janet Yellen, got Jerome Powell. I don't know if – I remember when that happened, we were doing our what did we call it? The Slattery Applebag Financial Report.
Yes. We did it every Friday, I believe.
Yeah, and I remember asking you about it, and you said you thought the new boss was the same as the old boss, that it really wouldn't matter. And I guess it really hasn't mattered, because there's probably, even if the Board of Governors is, I don't know if it's completely devoid of Jews, but it might be. And for a while, it was like chock full of Jews. Probably the Federal Reserve Board the Federal Reserve is staffed by Jews, like in its, you know, upper and middle echelons, is probably chock full of Jews still. I don't have access to that information, but it's not as if you would have a when you had Alan Greenspan or Ben Bernanke or Janet Yellen running the Fed, that they would have been hiring a bunch of Swedes or Scots to manage everything, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is the question that you pose, that you're pointing out, right? Like, will things change with getting a new, you know, head of the Fed? And
consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, Sierra Madre Precious Metals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Breeds or Scots to manage everything, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is the question that you pose, that you're pointing out, right? Like, will things change with getting a new, you know, head of the Fed? And, you know, largely, like, no, it hasn't, like you pointed out. And that is the question. Like, well, then who's really in charge? And it just correctly points out, I feel, and this is my view on things. You know, I could be wrong, but this is my personal take on things that, I mean, this is Rothschild, right? Rothschilds are basically, you know, and there's people like Brother Nathaniel has pointed out, like there's others too, but the Moses Seif family, which are Jewish, from Italy, and a couple others that I can't remember off the top of my head, but largely Rothschilds is the one, you know, everybody knows and really can't be argued that they're the largest shareholders of the Fed. And until, like, you know, we have, unfortunately, a catastrophe of, like, say, a World War III type of scenario, I don't think this is going to change. And, you know, I may be wrong that it may not take this big of a catastrophic event to change things. I don't know. I just don't see it, though. So, yeah, with in regards to, like, Jerome Powell, like, a goy being in charge of, like, I would refer to him more as, or I view him as like a PR type of person, right? Like these people that you see that get grilled by like the Senate Banking Committee and things like, in my view, these are, this is largely just PR stunts, right? So And I mean, the older I get, it just gets so easy to point out. And in addition, it gets equally as frustrating for other people to not be able to see, right? And simultaneously, you being called a Nazi or racist for trying to point this out also.
Okay, so you said that the Federal Reserve, that the Rothschild banking family is the biggest shareholder in the Federal Reserve, which...
Correct, that's...
I wouldn't be surprised. I was just wondering where you get that information.
Yeah. So to be fair, that's... Nobody really knows, right? Like, I cannot just outright prove that, because all of that is held secret. It really is, right? And these are coming from sources that, like, you just kind of have to trust. And so, but if you look at history and the way money has moved, it's not that hard to pinpoint this. And there are shareholders, but they hide this in very clever ways, like Jews like to do. But if you look at this would have went back to Napoleonic Wars, the bourgeois wars of Napoleon, right? Like the Battle of Waterloo, Rothschild came out and undercut almost the entire European economy and bought everything for pennies on the dollar, right? You know, the story is how he went and acted all depressed and was looking down at his shoes and kicking rocks. And everybody thought that, like, oh, he knew something I didn't, when the opposite was the truth, right? So everybody started selling, and then he started buying everything. And I know this may sound simplistic, but everybody should look this up. I would urge everybody to look this up. And I guess you could call this a genuine conspiracy theory, but there's awfully strong evidence to point to this conspiracy theory.
Well, you're talking about the Battle of Waterloo, right?
Correct, yes.
He very famously sent out like a bunch of boats, fishing boats and whatnot, into the English Channel, and he had agents, and they were able to kind of like Paul Revere style, you know, one of by sea and two of by land or whatever,
And pigeons. He had I don't know if this, how true, valid this is, but pigeons. He had the messenger birds, yeah, that would carry little notes with him.
Oh, well, passenger pigeons were still used even in World War I for communications.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, that would be very, very probable that would have been part of his network. At any rate, he had established a prompt communication so that he got word of the outcome of the Battle of Waterloo before his competitors. So I think that is a very well established story. I don't know if there's any real doubt about his historicity. I like to try to be as accurate as possible, even when I'm being accurate about the limits of my own information. So the Federal Reserve Board itself, the board doesn't have shareholders, but the board oversees 12 Federal Reserve banks, and the banks have shareholders. And I don't know, as far as I know, the current shareholding situation of these 12 banks, the most important is the New York Federal Reserve Bank, but you've got the Federal Reserve banks. If you look at $1 bill, on the left side of the $1 bill, there's a letter, right? Or is it on the right side? I don't have one handy. I think it's left.
It's on the back. I know what you're talking about.
Well, also in the serial number. The serial numbers will begin with a letter A through L.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hold up. homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You look at a $1 bill. On the left side of the $1 bill, there's a letter, right? Or is it on the right side? I don't have one handy. I think it's left.
It's on the back. I know what you're talking about.
Well, also in the serial number. The serial numbers will begin with a letter A through L. And A is for Boston, B is for New York, C is for Philadelphia. What's D for? D is for Cleveland. E is for Richmond, F is for Atlanta, G is for Chicago, H is for St. Louis, I is for Minneapolis, J is for Kansas City, K is for Dallas, and L is for San Francisco. Those are where the 12 banks are, and they are owned by the banks in their region. That's the way it was set up. And there may have been information about this, you know, various shareholding ratios that has come out at some point over the past, you know, 110 years since this was set up. I don't know if there's current information out there, but, you know, the Rothschild banking family, it's got various branches, and they do have big investments in all sorts of financial institutions. So it can be a little hard to track down, but what I'm saying is, and even if it's not the Rothschilds, you've got big Jewish, you know, Goldman Sachs. I don't know what their links to the Rothschilds are, but whatever their links are or aren't, it's a big Jewish bank, and these Jewish run banks. And the thing is, here's one other thing. Jews don't have to be a majority of a group to exert domination over it. And I tend to use the word domination rather than control. You know, domination, like control means that, I think, to me at least, control means that they could act single-handedly and get their way. Whereas domination means, they get their way. Maybe they get their way because they're, able to get the cooperation. They get, like, and that's the way our society is in general. I mean, Jews dominate. I don't think they control, because in very few instances are Jews in a position to get their way without the cooperation of non-Jewish groups, often non-white groups, but there's plenty of white collaborators with Jewish power. And Jews couldn't, the way I see it, they cannot get their way without collaboration from non-Jews. That's why I use the term domination instead of control. And there is something hopeful to that, because if you can get the proper information and understanding to these non-Jews about the nature of the Jewish agenda, you might be able to turn some of them. And also, if you got, and it's not just the elite that cooperates in Jewish power, it's just the run of the mill goyim that cooperates.
I would add, unknowingly.
Yeah, unknowingly, unwittingly, just by going along with it. Yeah. Just by all sorts of things, like just by watching the Jewish media, a media, there's no gun to our head. I've said this before. There's no gun to our head forcing us to watch CNN or NBC or, you know, go to Hollywood movies. People choose to do it. Would they choose to do it if they fully understood the nature of it?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. I guess I would push back a little bit and say, I guess you're right in the fact there's no like physical gun pointed to our head, but there is like a, say, proverbial gun pointed to everybody's head. And that is like being that gun, being pulled the trigger of and, being called racist. Right. And, which is no excuse in my view also. So, I mean, this herein lies the question, and I don't mean to quickly change the subject, but do you think, say, well, let's point out the fact that Christianity and Judaism worship the same God, knowingly the God of Abraham. And can we win a war with all of our people worshiping the same God as our enemies, which is, in this case, we would say the Jews? Do you think this is possible, or does this need to change?
Yeah, I'm just going to delete the word war, but I mean, war could be included in it. I just don't want to be seen calling for violence, but yeah.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, but I don't think Christianity is necessarily an obstacle, because if you look historically, Christianity dominated Europe. Christians wound up conquering most of the world at one point, and you've had very important,
but not largely until it was forced upon them, at least in Europe.
Until what was forced upon them?
Christianity.
Yeah, I mean. But you've had people like, you know, Martin Luther, who were very explicitly hostile to Jewish behavior.
Yes, and I'll just say, God bless him. He's probably one of the only that has, you know, specifically, at least one of the only I can think of in the Christianity spherical of influence that has specifically named out the Jew.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at America today, it is a disadvantage now. Christianity, the way it is practiced by so many people in America today, is an obstacle. I don't think it has to be.
And it's almost, it seems to me, the way I see things, and this is just my opinion, and everybody is free to disagree and challenge me on this, but it almost seems like Christianity in and of itself is held as sort of a sword of Damocles over the head of every person, right? That says, like, if you are deemed racist, right, that's a sin, and therefore there's a chance you may go to hell. So you're not allowed to be pro-white. And I know I'm kind of simplifying things to a large extent, but I mean, I think there's validity to that point.
Yeah. Well, so you've got, the Christian Zionists, obviously. And over the course of 100 years, a century and a couple of decades, by means of the Scofield Bible and by means of televangelists, you've had a very pro-Jewish indoctrination that has been inserted into the Christian message.
And it only seems to get worse with every passing year. That's why God bless people like Brother Nathaniel, which is a Christian, I would add.
Who's a Christian, who was born into an Orthodox Jewish family. He's ethnic Jew, but he is a Christian. And then you can look at a lot of the mainstream Protestant churches, for instance, where you've got... Through all sorts of things, there are these interfaith groups where you have conferences of, rabbis and priests and ministers, and they try to pull in some, Muslim imams, and they'll, try to agree on certain principles, like, being nice to immigrants and things like that. You get some means like that, but some of these, left-wing churches, like the Unitarians. I mean, and it's not only the Unitarians, but you go by some of these churches and they're flying the gay flag. And, the Unitarians, I think, are going really hard into the whole tranny stuff. So and of course, a lot of Christians would say, well, Unitarians aren't really Christian. And I think theologically, you could make that point, but it does come out of Unitarianism. Still comes out of, I guess it's kind of an adaptation of Christianity. So I don't know. I'm getting out of my comfort area, I guess, or my area of expertise by talking too much about Christianity.
Well, that's fair enough. I didn't mean to steer us this far off, and we were originally talking about the Rothschild and how they've been able to get away with, the control of the flow of information, which seemingly gets more important every year. Well, here's a question, just to kind of steer things in a different way real quick. What is your thoughts on the AI situation? Do you think AI, artificial intelligence, meaning is going to say bring on the apocalypse, or what's your thoughts on this? Do you have any?
Well, I don't know if you heard it, but like just maybe 2 weeks ago, I replayed one of our shows from 5 years ago where we were talking about this, the question is, as far as I'm concerned, the question is, who does the future belong to? Jewish AI robots or Chinese clones, Chinese genetically engineered clones? Because it seems like those are the leading candidates right now. I mean, I think there is a very scary potential, not necessarily in our lifetime, but before too long, of control of the Earth being passing from, you know, carbon-based biological humans to silicon-based electronic robots or, you know, AI machinery. Because at some point, if enough systems that humans rely on are automated computer systems, digital and electronic and made of silicon and metal, and we depend on them, our level of dependence reaches a certain point, and if the artificial intelligence, whether you want to say it's like internally aware or whatever, or just becomes infected with some sort of malevolent computer bug, right? Because, I mean, we know you get computer viruses, it'll take over your system and destroy your system, right? I mean, there's nothing new about that. That's been going on since the 1980s, if not earlier. Mm-hmm. And you could have some, like, just to keep with the theme of this show, someone in Israel, maybe not a kid in a basement, maybe it would be a person in a Mossad or a Mossad laboratory or something, just doing kind of a Samson option computer virus that could infect AI and just turn it malevolent. So I think there is a huge risk, and whether we go hardcore into AI now or we don't, at some point down the road, I think this is something you could have automation important enough that that they would be in this position. So what do you think?
Well, here's my thought, and I know we're probably running out of time. I'll try to wrap it up quick. But so right now, I work in security. I do computer security, and I also install security cameras and systems and stuff. So I really tend to get into this and want to understand and be all end all. And from what I've seen, there's a lot of construction involved in this too, right? Like, I work on houses that are being built and stuff. And, one thing I'll tell you that I haven't seen, and I'm not saying this will never happen, but one thing I have not seen yet, and I'll be very specific here, is a computer that can do fine, dexterous hand movement. Fine, dexterous hand movement. So this is crucial, like in the building of things, including computers and components. Now, we've automated a lot of this, and it can be programmed, but then again, right, who's programming this? So from what I can see right now, we still need people. And I'm not trying to jump to conclusions saying, but we'll always need people, right? But so far as I can see right now, like, there still needs to be somebody behind the wheel. And the fight over this is who is behind the wheel right now. And that's something that is largely left out of the discussion. And, you know, it doesn't take 20 questions to guess, like, who wants to be behind the wheel, right? Like, this is almost a fight, right, before the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. Got acted. Like, this is, I equate this to that, right? Like, they wanted to be behind the wheel. Like, these Jews as a whole, I'm not saying everybody will say, oh, it's not all Jews. Well, yeah, maybe whatever, but maybe not all Jews are behind this, but Jews largely in whole know that if they don't get behind this wheel, like, they may die off, right? Like, there's a potential for them to die off. And if any of them think that, right, they're going to huddle in mass like a swarm of freaking bees, like, to get behind this. And this is what I see happening, like, and you can kind of see this happening as we year after year progress, and, you know, the code gets more complex and layered upon. And there may be a time whenever we can see, say, a machine cut out a piece of drywall that, you know, has a receptacle or a data cat 6 input. And I'm not saying it will never happen, but I don't think we're close to that yet. It may take a few years, but, you know, we can't just keep kicking the can down the road. This is, I would argue, one reason why we're in this situation, because generations in the past have kept kicking the can down the road. And like the old saying goes, you don't plant a tree for you to enjoy the shade in your lifetime, right? Like, you plant a tree to enjoy, or for the future generations to enjoy the shade. And I think this is completely relevant to the scenario I've just described. And hopefully I've made some sort of sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense. So regarding tasks, there are tasks that at this point...
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Tahi Bo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available, and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To read more about this amazing breakthrough and to order your terahertz frequency wand, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
And hopefully I've made some sort of sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense. So regarding tasks, there are tasks that at this point robots aren't good at. There are tasks that only robots are capable of. And, you know, you look at the manufacture of circuitry for integrated circuits, for instance, or even transistors.
Or cars.
Yeah. And I think we need to just specify what artificial intelligence is. And wouldn't a more or less decent working definition be the ability of computers to program themselves? to gather information about their environment and program themselves.
So you're exactly right. You're exactly right. And this is something that I guess is a question mark. And even in people that are developers that are way smarter than me are kind of asking, right? Like, so a computer program that can learn from, say, the internet, right? Because, I mean, what do you do when you look something up, right? You go to, hopefully not Google, but you look it up on the internet, right? Well, it's going to, if you try to feed it false information or you ask something a question, it's going to try to look up, well, what is this true? And if there's anything else out there, you know, that contradicts that, it's going to say, well, this is contradictory to what this source says and everything. And so there again lies the importance of the control of the flow of information, right? So, I mean, we're back to that, right? What is more important, the control of information or the control of the flow of money? And it seems like as time goes by, the control of information is superseding the control of the flow of money. But at the same time, right, I mean, how does the control of information get produced, right? It's by the control of the flow of money. So it's sort of like a balancing act. And unfortunately, right now, Jews are in control of both. So and it's a constant battle. It's a battle for that. And I guess that's something to think about. That is my view.
It's something to think about. And, you know, the thing is, I made the point before about the media, that the Jewish media only has power because goyis are watching it. There's no gun to our head forcing us to watch it. And really, even with money, it's Jews, you could say Jews control money, but Jews don't own most of the money. There is a difference. And, you know, money, at the end of the day, you can, like, print money. But the value is in products and services being produced. And it's still, like, the production is still non-Jewish. So I just want to throw that out there. We're out of time, but we're doing our best. And I want to thank you for joining me, Philbert.
Well, yes, thank you for having me again. Awesome show. Hope everybody enjoys this.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Legal Review.
RepublicBroadcasting.org. Smash that donate button like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio? Like, what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
This is RBN.
The Republic Broadcasting Network.